Welcome to the Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Alifair Burke's latest page-turner is The Note. The book follows three longtime friends who, despite their intentions, don't always bring out the best in one another. A girl's weekend in the Hamptons allows their shared history to catch up with them and to reveal the dangerous secrets that lie beneath the surface of their friendship. Burke is the Edgar-nominated New York Times bestselling author of 14 novels of suspense, including The Ex, The Wife, The Better Sister, and Find Me. A former prosecutor, she's now a professor of criminal law, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Alifair Burke to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us. What a delight to have you on the program.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe. I appreciate it.
Again, the new novel is The Note. And as I was reading this, I realized that actually there are several notes that are a part of this book, aren't there?
Yes, but no spoilers.
No spoilers. but it's interesting because it's a theme that sort of keeps going throughout the novel, which I thought was fascinating.
The central note, the note that plays a big role in this is three friends are getting together in East Hampton for what's supposed to be a long sought after reunion. They haven't seen each other in real life, IRL, as people say, for a few years. And they're getting together in East Hampton for something that's supposed to be fun. And at what's supposed to be a practical joke, they leave a snarky little note on someone's car after a stolen parking spot. And then things kind of blow up from there. So it's the idea, just some, you know, one little thing, one small thing can snowball and create a lot of trouble.
And that small thing that snowballs, I mean, what is so fun to read in the novel is that in a way, nothing is the way it seems because there's so much context. There's so much backstory. There's so much within the relationships of these women and their partners that is fascinating. And you explore all of that. How much of that do you have to figure out in advance of where this is all going to go as you write about these twists and turns?
Yeah, I had a lot of the backstory worked out. Characters always surprise me on the page. You think you know them before you start to write about them. But, you know, I take about a year beginning to end to finish a book. And, you know, what you know about them when you start page one is real different by the time you get to the very last pages. I do a lot of rewriting once that first draft is done.
Right.
I'll go back to the beginning and I'll realize that what I wrote, you know, several months ago doesn't quite capture the nuances. And particularly since this was a book where you really do kind of have three main characters, it's not just getting to know them, but getting to know the dynamics among them. And it's almost, they're not three friends as much as three pairings, right? They each kind of have their own individual relationships. They're like overlapping Venn diagrams. These three women don't all know each other in the same way, if that makes sense. And so writing from their different points of view, I think I did a lot of rewriting to kind of capture those dynamics about moments that they've kind of moved in and out of each other's lives and moments that they missed, right? That some of them are more well-versed in phases of each other's lives than the others are. So kind of putting all those pieces together, I think, was the satisfactory part of the plot kind of comes together, because when the characters come together, that's where all the secrets come out. And there's some surprises at the end.
Absolutely. With all of that said, I thought it was really interesting and an interesting choice that these three women are friends, but they're not like besties. They're not close friends who spend every waking moment with each other or texting or talking. They're friends. They've had a background and knew each other in childhood and have remained friends. And that's a much different dynamic, isn't it?
Yeah, that aspect of the book came to me because I don't know about you, but when weird things happened in 2020 and we were forced to live inside for a while, you didn't get to see anybody, right? So you're living in your house. And if you're like me, you need companionship, you need other people in your life, but you can't see them. And I, like a lot of people, that created time to start having, you know, Zoom cocktail parties with people that you would normally not necessarily have the time to talk to all the time. So when you stopped seeing the people that you used to see every day because of proximity, because you work in the same building or, you know, you you know,
Right.
your neighbors. I think a lot of us started text messaging people that we've maybe known a long time but don't see on a daily basis. It's like you started to have all these long distance friendships. And in the story, Mae, Kelsey, and Lauren, they met each other at a camp, you know, years ago, where Lauren was really the mentor to the two younger women. And she's always kind of been a constant in their life, but more as a mentor and a long distance advisor. And then the two friends who are the same age, they used to kind of be besties, as you said, but that was really kind of in college and high school, and they've fallen out of each other's lives, but they got kind of back together again when some unusual circumstances happened in their lives that brought each other back. So a lot of it has to do with online relationships. You know, if you're talking to somebody by text
Right.
and emojis, you know, it may not be quite the same as when you're actually like under the same roof with them for a week.
You mentioned accurately, of course, that the really there's three main characters in the book, but Mae Hanover is the lead here in the beginning of the book, certainly. And a person who has always been very good and top of her class, raised by a first generation Chinese single mother who had very high expectations for her daughter.
And Mae has internalized that. She never wants to be a source of trouble, right? She always wants to be the good girl.
Yeah.
She's a people pleaser. She wants to meet all expectations. And probably the person who has the highest expectations for her is herself. And so I think she has a lot of anxiety because of that. I think what the book explores, mostly I want it to be a fun page-turning mystery, of course. But in terms of what's kind of driving the characters, I think all three of these women have perceptions of themselves that they're constantly trying to meet that aren't necessarily who they really are, if that makes sense. They're almost
Sure.
kind of they're getting to know each other through each other.
But and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but it seems like May has a pretty good idea of who she is.
She isn't, she overthinks things, I think. I mean, she's a true
Yeah.
overthinker. She overthinks so much that she'll criticize herself for overthinking. You know, her friends call her the little sheriff almost because she just has to be perfect and she has to know all the answers and she has to make everything right. What you learn in the book about her is sometimes those things can backfire on you. Sometimes things are better left alone.
And we read about this in her relationships, but besides with her friends, but with a partner and figuring that out and where that is in a sort of a fragile moment. And it goes to really show that a lot of these things are very fragile, that what seems like a very solid relationship can shatter pretty quickly.
She's definitely going through some things, Mae. She's trying to control them. And I mean, I think that's definitely a theme that runs through the book is the idea that sometimes her commitment to making everything right and to making everything the way it should be makes things bad. That sometimes her meddling, whether it's in her own relationships, in her friendships, at work, right, she can be self-destructive, her best intentions, right, her desire to always be correct or always to get things right can actually be a burden to herself and other people.
Alla Faher Burke is the author of the new novel, The Note, which is out now from Knopf. So let us talk about the other two main characters here, beginning with Kelsey, is a really interesting character and a rather dramatic character.
Yeah, Kelsey's a lot. Kelsey's the friend who checks on you every day. She'll remember, you know, that a big meeting that you were excited about, and the minute you're done with the meeting, she'll say, "How was it?" Right? I mean, she cares a lot about her friends and has a big heart. But her backstory, they all have interesting backstories. So I said things happen, and that's why they get back together in adulthood. What winds up happening is they each, in very different ways, wind up getting some unwanted attention from strangers, particularly online. Mae has a moment that makes her a Karen, as they call it in the vernacular, right? Where she has a bad, bad day and it gets recorded and goes viral. And Kelsey's backstory is that 7 years ago, her husband from whom she was getting divorced at the time, was murdered at the side of the road in a botched robbery. And she becomes the target of these true crime message boards of kind of the at-home detectives who go online and try to solve crimes on the internet. And I have to admit, I am a lurker on those message boards. I have cases I follow. Everybody had their theories about who Luigi Mangione was going to turn out to be, right? And so, kind of these online warriors who play detective and can come up with some very excellent theories. One of their theories is that Kelsey must have been involved in her husband's unsolved murder. And so she's also kind of withdrawn from social media and keeps herself very private. And May is doing that too. And then Lauren came out that she had an affair with a very wealthy man and had some unwanted attention because of that. So that's kind of how they get back together, is they
Right.
console each other, against all of this unwanted attention from kind of these toxic attention from strangers.
And before we focus on Lauren for a moment, Kelsey also comes from a wealthy background.
Yes, with everything that's going on, that murder case I just referenced before, I mean, there's such class resentment right now. I mean, I don't think that's
Yeah.
a secret, and that definitely plays into the perception that Kelsey must be guilty, is that she's this privileged, entitled lady, whose husband was going to leave her, and that's why she must have snapped and killed him, even though there's no proof that at all. It's just total speculation. The way people feel so free, right, to speculate about strangers on the internet, it becomes this form of almost fan fiction, right?
I was taken by when you were talking earlier about the message boards and that you work on these as well. But as you write it, and again, without giving anything away, as we read some of the things that are posted there, I mean, some are wrong, but they're eerily correct. Like, you wonder how some person who is quote unquote anonymous knows so much by simply saying, my brother who works in the department suddenly knows all this stuff.
Yeah, you never, and you, when you read that stuff, you don't know if it's true or not, right? It could
Right.
be somebody
Yeah.
who really knows what they're talking about, or it could be people just lying because you have no idea who these people are. We've seen the internet come up with theories that have been very, very wrong and damaging to innocent people, but sometimes they get it right.
Let's talk about Lauren for a moment. And sort of the quieter of the three, I guess, but yet still, as you say, has a very interesting backstory.
Yes, I find her very fascinating, where the other two are a little dramatic, let's say. Lauren is very much, she's very composed, and she's a composer. I mean, she's the adult among the three of them, and I think she's the one who really does know exactly who she is and is very confident and talented, but she doesn't have children of her own. To the extent she has a relationship, it's a very non-traditional one. And you could tell that she's somebody who's kind of looked after these two somewhat younger women. They're her friends, but they're also almost her. There's definitely sort of a mother-child dynamic to their friendship. And she's kind of the one who, more so than the other two, she'll be the one who is willing to let them be who they are, give them a lot of room, give them a lot of unconditional love. When they need to have a read, as you say, she'll be the one to read them. She'll say, hey, you're going too far. You need to check yourself. And so, again, that dynamic among those three women, I find, helps the mystery be more propulsive than it would be if you had three women who were exactly the same, right? They're very different.
I'm going to generalize here, but the relationship that these characters have with their parents is very complex and really interesting because they're varying relationships, but they play such a large role in everything.
Yeah, and it's funny because they're not, again, no spoilers, but for the most part, the older generation is not on the page. But hopefully, I did my job well, where to the extent these three women are so different and have some things about their personalities that are unusual, you can see it coming from the way they were brought up and their relationships with their parents. Lauren talks about her parents never really understanding what made her tick, and she clearly left her family's house. She alludes to them and feeling close to them, but she talks much more about her so-called found family. And then Kelsey's mother died when she was young, and she was raised by a stepmother and her father. And then, as you mentioned, May was raised really by her mother and had a white father who had no interest in either of them.
Ella Faire Burke is our guest in this week's book show. The name of the new novel is The Note, and it is published by Knopf. You mentioned this a moment ago, and I'd like to go back to it because all three of these women have in common is something that they've been, for want of a better term, been burned by the internet. I just found that interesting because I think if you group a lot of people together, you're going to find a majority of them have, in some way, have a burning from the internet, have been burned by it. I mean, that's just in a sociological sense, fascinating.
Yeah, I'm fine. I mean, look at the world we live in. It looks very,
Right.
very different than the one we grew up in because, and a big part of that is the internet. And in my book, at least, it's definitely a double-edged sword. The ability to communicate virtually is part of what has kept these women in each other's lives. 50 years ago, it would be pretty rare for people who met in childhood, if they lived in three different places, to stay in touch at all, right? Facebook and Instagram has made it possible to kind of stay involved in people's lives forever, even if you're not going to dinner with them or taking trips together. It's given people easy access to information that you might want private. So there's privacy concerns. And then also just the kind of toxicity of anonymous people saying horrible and kind of scary things about people they don't know on the internet can create almost a sort of paranoia that I think, hopefully, if I wrote it correctly, there's kind of this collective paranoia among the three of them of what are
Sure.
strangers saying about us? How's this going to look? Is someone going to record us if we're doing something, at a restaurant?
As you said, though you're cognizant, you're worried and concerned about things that you certainly wouldn't have been 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, I mean it's I mean this isn't part of the book, but it's similar to the kinds of fears that they're facing. Last week I was on vacation. You wake up and you'd rather not even read your email at all. It used to be vacation was vacation. No one could find you unless they called your hotel,
Right.
right? I'm showing how old I am, but now you got to check your emails even though you're on vacation. And someone sent me an email in the middle of the night saying, "I've been hired to kill you." And
Oh,
yeah.
yeah.
Like to my personal email, "I've been hired to kill you, and I will tell you who hired me, but they're paying me, and I want you to pay me more, basically. But you have to promise not to call the FBI, blah, 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 blah." So, of course, like that gets your attention at 7 in the morning when you thought you were on vacation. And of course, I Google it, and it's a scam. It's a scam that people use to try to get people to give them money. And you're supposed to just delete it, not worry about it. But it's weird, it's weird to just think.
Yeah.
Like, how did they get my email address? Why did they send that to me? Do they even know who I am? Or is it a bot, generating random email addresses? Who knows? I'm still alive, though. If they're a hitman, they're bad at their job.
Made it. You made it home. That's good. Yeah, but it's hard to go back to sleep after that. I mean, that's, you
Yay. That's
know,
what I mean. It's just easy access to somebody, and there's nothing you can do about it. Like, if it were a mailed letter, maybe you'd figure out what post office they sent it from. You can get fingerprints, things like that. But it's very easy for someone to send you an anonymous d
Yeah.
direct message or tweets. Don't read the replies in your tweets. It can be very bad.
Very nerve-wracking. I mentioned in the introduction you're a former prosecutor, you're a professor of criminal law. I thought that the law enforcement presence in this book, this just seems to be a good guy. Like
Oh
this,
yeah. I like Carter Decker. He's
yeah, this is a good character who's not. Is just trying to do the right thing, has a heart, has a soul, and is interested in finding justice.
yeah, he's I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say that we talked about the petty little note, like the supposed to be a practical joke about a stolen parking spot. But that note winds up getting it's becomes relevant to a missing persons case, let's say that. And Carter Decker, really, he's the kind of person who, once somebody goes missing in the town where he works, he's going to find out what happened to them. And when he realizes a potential connection between that guy's disappearance and this group of three women who appear pretty innocuous out having fun and sun in the Hamptons, he's not going to let that drop. And the first time he meets the women, he's like, "There's something there. Somebody here knows something. I don't know which one of them." But someone here knows
Right.
something, and why aren't they telling me? And he's not going to let that drop.
What I found interesting about it, though, and as you often find in crime fiction, is that there's something off about the about the person in law enforcement. They have their background, their secrets. Here's a guy who does really seem to have whatever the backstory is the backstory, but here is someone who is doing his job the best he possibly can do it.
Yeah, I think that's right. He's a local kid who grew up there, kind of born and bred out in East Hampton, and that's very different than the people like May and Kelsey and Lauren who show up just for a
Yeah.
weekend, right? There's some stuff in the book that, so I live out in East Hampton now, so I feel like I know what the year-round people think of the summer people, and he has a little he has some of those resentments, right? And he kind of does bring that. You know, at the very beginning, when somebody does go missing and it's a summer person, also from wealth, his initial reaction is a little glib. His initial reaction is, oh, this is some rich kid who's gone missing. And,
Sure.
you know, I'm sure he's off partying with some all coked up, and that's why he hasn't called his mommy. But then when it becomes clear that it's more serious than that, I think it's almost his guilt about having blown it off at first that he really does dig in, and wants to do the right thing.
How did your profession, then lead itself to wanting to write about crime and to write, well, just to
Yeah,
write
I've always
novels?
like, which came first, the chicken or the egg? I've always been obsessed with crime and mysteries. I like May, I guess. I'm someone who just I can't let. There's a reason I lurk on those true crime boards. There's this kind of need for answers. Like, oh, if I just could figure it out. And I've always been like that, and that led me to read crime stories and mysteries growing up. And it probably also led me that once I was in law school, lo and behold, I wanted to go do the criminal stuff. But when I was working as a prosecutor in Portland, Oregon, I was also reading a lot, including my beloved mystery novels. But I noticed a lot of times in mystery novels, when you do get a lawyer on the page, like when a district attorney shows up or a defense attorney shows up, it suddenly gets really boring. It's like hearsay, objection, you need a warrant. And it's a lot of technical stuff. To me, at the time, as a prosecutor, I was like, no, that's not what makes the job interesting. What makes the job interesting is the stuff that happens in the hallways. It's the stuff that happens in chambers. It's not the
Right.
stuff that's in the transcript. And so I became one of those lawyers who thought, you know, one day I'll write a novel. And so my first novel, the main character was a prosecutor in Portland, Oregon, working in the same office I used to work in. And I really thought that I would write one book. And I was lucky enough that that book came out during a time when mystery series were the big trend. People really liked those. And so my agent called me and said, you know, good news, there's multiple editors who are interested in it. It's probably going to go to auction, but they want to know if it's a series. And I was like, well, do they is it better for it to be a series or not to be a series? Because I really didn't know. And he goes, oh no, I think they're all assuming that it's a series. And I was like, well, then it's definitely a series. I
I
definitely planned
can
it
do
that
this
way.
again,
I
sure.
can definitely do this again, even though that book took me 4 years to write. So I kind of found myself with a contract for a second book. And I'm like, well, I can do a second book. And then I did a third and a fourth. And then I think this one's my 15th. And then I also co-authored a series with Mary Higgins Clark. So I think that gets me up to 23 or 24 or something
Yeah.
like that. But it's been. My first book came out in 2003, so it's been a while.
I was going to ask you of what it was like to work with Mary Higgins Clark and what you learned from that experience.
Yeah, I mean, delightful. I mean, that was the easiest yes I think I ever gave was, would you like to have lunch with me and talk about working on a book together? I'm like, yes and yes. But in terms of learning, you know, I think my books have become a lot more streamlined, I would say. If I find myself, particularly on the legal side, if I find myself adding any kind of procedural detail that doesn't advance character plot or setting, I drop it. And I kind of try to keep things moving quickly. I also think something I was already doing but wasn't conscious of is when Mary and I decided we wanted to try to write together, we're like, well, how are we going to do this? Because neither one of us outlines. And so if you're kind of just winging it, two people can't wing it at the same time. You know, like it's just not going to work. And so we're like, so we started talking about where do we get our story ideas from, and we kind of began verbalizing that you really have to start with the characters. And the characters, once you really understand what is interesting about the character, that might lead you to the plot. And so that's how we started to work together. And I think now that I understand that about my process, I'm more conscious of it. I'm more confident about that. I worry less about the plot than getting the characters nailed down first. And if anything, my plots have gotten better and twistier as a result of it. I can't really explain it better than that. I believe it to be true.
I was blessed to have her as a guest on this program many times, and I always think of something that she said, which is the way she describes the way she would write a book is that it's a dark and stormy night and it's raining and a young woman is driving down the road and she turns on her turn signal to turn right and a little voice in her head says, "No, dear, go left." And I think that's just like the greatest thing. And you see that in almost all of her novels. It's just fascinating.
Yeah, she's a wonderful person too, because she also, you know, she was very proud of the fact that she wrote about characters who were everyday normal people, like kind of good people leading good lives, and yet they would find themselves in terrible trouble and danger, you know. And it I like that approach to storytelling. You know, the characters can be very accessible, normal people, and yet the stories can be dark.
Would she utilize your use your background of what you had done in as a prosecutor?
The series that we worked on together was one where it was a TV show. It was a TV producer reinvestigating cold cases, but the host of the show was a lawyer, and so they would use kind of a legal approach to reinvestigating cases. So I think that my expertise, my past, and my knowledge came in handy for that. And then because I am so interested in technology, you know, that there's probably a little bit of a, I probably played a little role in that. Those aspects of the story often came from me, the technological stuff or social media stuff.
Well, the new book is out. It's just terrific. Congratulations on it. Congratulations. You got a new publisher, Knopf.
Yes, with
That's pretty
Knopf.
cool. That's very nice. It's just an absolute delight to read. I thank you so much
Thank
for
you so
being
much for
with
having
us, and I wish you all the luck in the world.
Thank you so much.
Thanks to our producer, Sarah LaDuke. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on National Productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at wamc.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.